thank you also. Perhaps we found now quite different aspects of standardization. And I can only try to start the first questions. How standard should be understood. I was especially impressed by Tinnegas' sentence in one of her papers. A standards process is not an innovation process. And I thought in all three lectures about that. How is the relationship between innovation and standardization? Perhaps all of you three can say something about it, because you all mentioned it implicitly or even explicitly. Who wants to start? Frank, perhaps?
Yeah, okay. In our project, standardization is absolutely needed for innovation, and the whole process of e-government in the people registration process here in Germany started with our standardization project. This was the first time when the IT experts and the experts from the registration offices met together in a group with the clear goal to make efficient and cheaper processes here in the system. And it grows up, and now the standardization is just a part of this e-government in this area, but it started definitely with this standardization.
Oh, thank you. It's probably quite different from the original sentence.
Yeah.
Well, okay, as far as the work of W3C is concerned, well, it's a matter of gravity that Tim Berners-Lee attracts a lot of researchers. And nevertheless, there's also the industry, there are the users. And so, well, okay, it is not research that is done there, but I think it is. In some way, it is innovation, or it is, well, okay, we get the requirements from the researchers for the standards. And if you look at Semantic Web, most of the developments that go into W3C standards is done by the academic community.
Now, I have to defend my own. May I like debate with myself. I have this interior debate going on always. Let me try to. I don't know where you got it from, but I could have said it.
I can prove it.
Okay. Let me give an example. Let me start by saying there are, if you extrapolate, there are two types of standardization. You can standardize ex ante, and that was standardization which was very popular in the 1980s, or with the OSI, Open Systems Interconnection. The idea was, if you devise a framework and you try to get people together as a sort of a specification development group, and then each layer by layer you put all this intelligence and expertise in the standard, and this is really ex ante standardization. TCP/IP is a good example, I think, of a mix of de facto standardization, I'm sorry, going to make it difficult for you, and ex post standardization. If you look at how TCP/IP developed within this project of the Department of Defense of the U.S., and then so there was first this thing, I think, concept of proof. I think Eben Mokdun called it, and then this was taken as a sort of, this was exposed, standardized, and projected onto the OSI framework. So this was the this is a sort of easy type of exposed standardization because it already had a sort of market. It was a de facto standard, and then it was made official, like HTML. Also, in second instance, it was really made as a sort of focus point for new developments, which is a very valuable asset of standards, I think. But then you have the difficult process of people having things, different things, and then coming into this committee, and they have to somehow find a compromise. And in the strict sense, this is not what I would call innovation. They have the technology. The only thing is, can they reach consensus, which is something very special if it can be reached? I mean, I don't really understand how it's possible that groups of people, sometimes with very different and very high stakes, it's not millions, it's billions sometimes at stake, that sometimes then somehow they reach consensus. And this type is this is what I think is most special and what I have been focusing on most in the past, and I think that's why I probably said it's not innovative in the technical sense. In the market sense and in the social sense, I might say something different.
Mm-hmm. May I just follow? You had a strong statement in your presentation. You said OS development may implode if there will be no standards. Probably this is a little bit very broad.
Yes, trying to keep the audience
awake.
Can
you focus it and let the others comment it? Or don't you want to comment it simply?
No, well, it's a question which I would have, it's a sort of what I think is going to happen, a bit of pessimistic view that if people keep on diverging or improving things in what I think is the OS manner, do you recognize the problem that there's a problem of interoperability? So I think maybe it's also interesting to see if the audience who really do the work recognize my fears.
Let's see it.
There's nothing to do, just wait for the technician to tune up.
Or throw it.
Okay.
It worked.
Okay, if you say open source software that doesn't follow standards or doesn't follow standards enough, I think you have to discriminate between different kinds of standards, and you basically have three kinds of standards. The first kind of standard, and in my opinion the most important one, is data formats, data exchange formats, protocols, file formats, file system formats. The second kind is interfaces in running software systems like POSIX, for a good example. And the third one is software development process standards, say common criteria, ISO 9001, or whatever. The third one, I think, is pretty much irrelevant for open source software because it...
Sorry, it's irrelevant for what?
Open source.
Open source, okay.
Yeah. So the first one is really interesting, and I think open source actually does follow standards there. Or it does follow standardized processes, because often you have these kinds of de facto standards in the request for commands and whatever. And it's every important data exchange format in the open source world is standardized in one way or another. And where you see all kinds of divergences is in the APIs. If you want to do a zero copy transmit to the network in okay. So in the interfaces, I think it's not that important, and you see open source software to not follow standards there very often. If you want to send a file to the network without doing a copy in Linux or FreeBSD, you have pretty much different APIs, which on the one hand annoys the programmer, on the other hand it's not really that much of a problem. because you can work around it in 2 or 3 or maybe 10 lines of code. The software does work on BIOS anywhere. It was a little bit more of work, but now I think there would be completely different network protocol. That would be a catastrophe, and it hasn't happened so far. So far, people had agreed on formats, while people tend to be have very long discussions and tend to often not agree on APIs. So that's my view of the open source world, and I think the important part is that we talk the same words on the wire, on the network. That has so far worked very well.
Okay, someone wants to comment further here? Either on the...
May I try to... So what you're saying is you distinguish 3 types of standards, data exchange, data structures, interfaces, and system development standards, and you're saying which one was relevant for OS?
Most important one is the data format.
That data format, but you're not talking about. Oh, sorry, you're not talking about XML, are you?
For example, that's also data format, so it's also very important that you have standardized. Mm. For example, all those kinds of websites with all this Flash crap in there, and Internet Explorer extensions or old Netscape extensions. It's really annoying to go to some website where you want to buy a flight, and it just doesn't even tell you it optimized for Internet Explorer and says no. It just tries to work, and then you do the final button push to book the cheap flight. It just doesn't work because they used some crappy extension over there and didn't even think of it.
Okay. So, yeah, go ahead. I think you're breathing too. Okay. But that is standardized. Yeah? There are partly standardized, and where it's not standardized, it's a problem. So why is it? Why do you say that's most important for open source? Because I would say a lot of open source developments are not in the area of data.
Actually, I think it's most important for everyone. But we're mostly concerned about open source here, and sometimes in the industry, in the commercial software development. They have other reasons to not follow the standards. I don't think it's good reasons, but the business people often think so. So it's not really my problem, and especially not here. Well, actually, it is my problem in the end if they use these non-standards. But, well, so for open source, it's very important to follow standards or de facto standards so everyone talks to each other.
Okay, someone wants to comment here on you? No. Then there's one behind, very behind, and then there's another one.
That's element. My name is Stefan Meyer, Siemens AG in Munich. I'm heading a process of internal standardization within Siemens, which is an ex post standardization by your definition. And what I'd like to find out from Mr. Steinke, especially, is the process of finding consensus. I mean, what is at stake at Siemens is savings. I mean, making room for innovation by freeing people from doing redundant work. That is our prime motivation behind standardizing some of the architectures and products and data structures that we use across a lot of products. But how did you guys organize your processes of building consensus, of finding agreement? And that seems to be a real challenge, I mean, looking from where we come from, at least.
Well, you mean especially here in the XMELT? Well, I think that here we have the situation that all of the software companies are really angry that we have different laws in all the federal states here in Germany, and they have lots of costs and much money for maintenance of all the different interfaces in all the different states and cities sometimes. And that's why we have a great interest in doing this. Sie wollen sich einigen. They want to make this standardization. because they can reduce the cost. And this is, and that's why we are able to find consensus here. They see the advantages, a lot of advantages.
There was a second question behind.
I would like to ask a question about market and markets. Of state who has to buy it, conservative, stupid state that has to buy these products, these digital signatures, the standards overpriced the digital signatures so nobody uses it. And I don't understand why a digital signature, according to the law, cost me, say, I don't know, 70 euro, nobody really uses it, while I can get from a web of trust like a GNU privacy group these open standards for free somehow, and it works, and it's a good system. So every time in state procurement you have the problem that standards are used as trade barriers. Another example is the V model that has to be applied in state procurement and makes your software construction process very complicated. So you have to have many different roles and persons involved. Mm-hmm. And it's good in order to have such high standards for a company because you can charge so much and it's publicly applied, so every company has to agree on these standards. But I see standards somehow in the state procurement as a kind of self-exploitation of state driven by conservatism in the state departments.
Okay, this is rather a comment and I do not... Do you want to answer? You must not.
Yeah, well, first thing is that in my understanding, the situation with digital signatures is just the other way around. I think that most of the software companies would like to have standards which are not as complicated as the ones that we need today. So the decision to have this this very, very high level of security here involved with digital signature and encryption is done by the government because maybe it's typical German that we can't accept that we have some percentage of failure in a system. We want absolutely security for 100%. And when we talked to companies like SAP and Microsoft, they didn't understand that, but of course they said, well, if the government wants this technique, we will produce it for them and we will get the money for this, of course. But as I said, it's not driven by these companies. I think that we have a lot of examples where we have standards which are made top-down, which will not succeed. For example, we have standards like was war das, Fiscus, Fiscus for finance, and we have Inpool Neu for the police. I can only hope that the advantage of XMelt is that we started from top down because we have people just from the basics, from the roots, people who said we want our work to be simplified and we want to improve the quality of our service. And when we had a little basic in our standards, then the Ministry of Interior saw that something good has growing up. I can only hope that there's another story here. Okay.
Perhaps I should add there's also a banking sector that is not very interested in this standard. and has a much lower, interesting enough, a much lower idea of what is security. Mm-hmm. And as long as the banking sector is not really engaged, mm-hmm. I do not see a future of this digital signature. That's my personal opinion. Yeah. Reina, you were next. No, okay. Then you were next.
I would like to know, I had the idea that you found it quite sort of ridiculous that the German Bundesrat had to vote on versions of your system.
Yeah.
And I wanted first to know why, and second, could you imagine a situation where the corresponding laws which deal with your developments, that these corresponding laws are not enough to describe the further developments of the consequences of e-government implementation?
Well, answer for the first question is that this is a formal requirement. That means that when the use of a standard is laid down in a law, then you have to name this standard completely, because software companies have to invest in the standard, and the formal rule says that it's not enough to say you have to use OSCI Transport, for example. The law is that you have to say you have to use OSCI Transport version 1.2, and you have to use it from January 1st, 2007, and it's valid until 1st of June 2009 or something like that. And from the next day on, the 2nd of June in this example, version 1.3 is valid. That's a formal rule, and that's why the Bundesrat has to vote about it, because, as I said, the Melderechtsrahmengesetz and more laws say that OSCI Transport and OSCI XMALT have to be used, so we have to name them, these versions, very clear. That was answer for the first question. The second, I didn't understand exactly. You asked about the relationship between the laws and the...
If you can imagine a situation where existing laws are not explicit or detail-rich enough to describe further developments...
Yeah, sure, sure. I think that the requirements for further development are mostly not from the laws, but mostly from user requirements and from requirements of the market here in government. But the law has to follow this situation. So first of all, for example, someone says that we urgently need new rules for example, inquiries about citizens' data. Then we, as a standardization committee and as technicians, we try to figure out whether this is possible and how much this will cost, and then we try to develop a solution. But no one is able to use this solution until it is allowed in the law. So laws follow this process of development. And then maybe new laws allow new things, and we have to make this in our standardization. Okay?
Before jumping up to catch my plane, just one question for curiosity. Since your things are based on XML and a few XML standards, where the reference version is in English, is there any problem to have a law based on an English text?
Yeah.
I thought so.
All our tags in OSCI Transport, which is application independent, are made in English and are something like SOAP. And all of our tags the OSCI XML standard are in German. We are unable to translate them. we had we checked this out, and we had one example why this is not possible in our opinion. In the German registration system, you have a concept which is called the Hauptwohnung. This is the main residence. The main residence. The main residence has some consequences for the people that live in this main residence. You may have many residents, but one of them is special. The guy from the federal government, which is responsible for the law here in Germany, tried to translate this concept to Italy, to Italian, because they wanted to do a contract between the German state and the Italy state. And there is no such concept like a main residence in Italy. So how can you translate this? How can you translate concepts? And that's the reason why we think that we are unable to translate the text in the application layer of OCR.
My question was the other way around. How can you use English text in German law?
I'm sorry to interrupt, but we are less than 5 minutes away from the next track, so we would have to break it off. Maybe the last questions now. Thank you.
The two last questions.
Well, it just fits to the last discussion. I'm working for the trade union in the government, and I'm also member of the advisory committee of Media.com Transfer now. And the interesting part is that before you make a technical standardization, you have to make a standardization on what you want to standardize as a process. In e-government, you have to have an idea of if it's worth to really use the German system, or if it's better to say, hey, we're in Europe, or we're in a world and we have now a technique which gives us the chance to just use one way of, for example, for registration or so. So this is one thing. And I was very curious about what you said, Mr. Schneimke, about OSCE and it's not free to develop anymore. Because I think this is a problem. Of course, you can develop it, but it has to be accepted, the development has to be accepted by a certain committee and the Bundesrat and so on. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a problem of how do we save the possibility of a bottom-up development by people on what should be standardized,
yeah.
And how do we standardize and how do we keep this standardization as open as possible? And I think this is the sort of way we have to find, and it's not easy. And the last thing I want to say is, in the other panel, they talk about economies of open source and free software, and they say the public sector is a very, very important sector to make money. Mm. So if we don't have standardization in free software use, you won't make any money in public sector, that's for sure.
Okay, can we consider this a comment? And Mercedes, you're the last question.
Yeah, I have sort of a comment too. Well, up till now we discussed this in a more pragmatic level, which I think is okay, but I want to say that standards are as well interesting on a more abstract level if you think of standards as questions of power. For example, the TCP/IP protocol, in the way it is, it gives the intelligence ends to the TCP part and leaves the IP part, the really very simple protocol stuff, and I think this effect, made that we deal with the internet as it is now today, like that we can all have our little industrial software or open source software at the ends, and not there's not only one company or the ARPA or whatever who owns the whole net. So I think it's very important to see this and discuss this as well, and therefore your critique to the open source movement, I think, is partly right, but partly wrong as well, because I think the other software companies have the same problem as that what you described for open source, because, well, open source for once has standards, but it has them on a more on the law or on the right, because you have, if you write open source software, it's licensed, so it is already one form of standard, but only on another point. It's on a point of law and not on a point of technology. But you can see that the groups themselves producing, they it's never good to do a fork, and every group that produces open source software knows that don't fork any project. And I think, this is kind of a social standardization that goes on as well. And then even if you look over to, normal software like Microsoft or Adobe, I have even problems exchanging PDF programs from my Apple over to a PC, so they can add up there as well.
Good comment. Maybe I didn't formulate it as precisely as I wanted to. This is a very general problem. But what I'm concerned with is that a very good movement, a very fruitful movement, may end up imploding if they don't pay enough attention to interoperability, to coordination mechanisms, and to standardization as a structural option to converge. But it's not just open source problem, it's everyone's problem. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for the remark that open source is not singular in these problems. Thank you all for coming, and have a nice conference. Thank you.